What's so great about?
Hello and welcome to What's So Great About, the podcast that has no fear, like Tom fucking Cruise. My name is Terry.
My name is Andy.
Andy, how the bloody hell are you?
Very, very well. And you, Terry?
I too am well.
Good to hear it, pal. It's been too long.
Yeah.
Now, apologies in advance for our quality. So it might be car crash. So we're just going to throw that out there now. This is why we don't do home records.
Because we did them exclusively for like 2 years way back when. But
I can't believe that we did
them. I know. And like our first guests and all were like, bar Tony, I think our first guests were all remote records.
Yeah, we had like Killian Sunderman and Peter McGann. Bill Oakley, yeah, of course. Jesus
Christ. What a nice guy.
God, we were home recording when we were interviewing Bill Oakley.
Yeah, no, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we would have
had to. What a arm. Yeah, yeah.
You
didn't fly in? He didn't fly in just for us?
They really put me up the jump of a hotel.
What a nice guy. What a nice fellow.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Listen.
And we almost had Weinstein on the hook as well.
No, I don't remember. Oh, no. Josh Weinstein. I thought you were talking about Harvey Weinstein. Like, we never.
So how did you get all those Oscar, Harvey?
Yeah. Wait, over here, I'll tell you.
Follow me down to this hotel room. Here's a fact about him. I was listening to a podcast and it was like 1 year. It might have been 2007. Maybe I'm wrong with that. But there was a year where he had four of the five Oscar nominees were all Harvey Weinstein pictures.
Jesus Christ.
Piece of shit.
I mean, but like, was it all, like, did he do that to everyone? Was he just like one of these like casting couch creeps?
Yeah, or but was it was kind of like, his whole thing was that it was like he would pick up all these kind of like award savvy movies and then like run these campaigns where it would be like, well, that picture is never gonna win it, and then it'd be like, oh, it's picking up steam, because he would run these like ruthless Oscar campaigns like to all the voting bodies and like making sure that they got nominated or whatever. I'm sure he had fucking dirt on everybody, like the mob, like,
yeah,
you know, if you don't vote for my picture, I'm gonna blow up your food truck.
Let's just say, yeah, you might have an unfortunate accident.
I suggest you do what I do and just jump over here now.
Well, listen, Terry, me and you went to the movies a mere few days ago to see. And I swore,
I can't believe I got you.
It was the DiCaprio factor. I was like, it's a movie not starring Joaquin Phoenix, it looked like it was interesting. You know what I mean? It looked like it had a lot going on. The lack of plot is my big issue with him. You know.
My opening salvo, by the way, this is how rusty we are, was inferring to the fact that, you know, we went to see one battle after another. The 10th film by Paul Thomas Anderson, his biggest grossing hit, 130 mil worldwide so far.
Ooh.
Immediately has jumped to the front of the queue for Oscar, you know, best picture front runner.
Oh, really? Really? Very good.
That's the talk of the town.
I hope it. I hope it doesn't get it. Now, I'd be happy for it to win some Oscars, but I've been boycotting the principle of Best Picture winners for years now. But I actually really enjoyed this one. This will throw my whole system on.
Well, I get what you're saying, because sometimes, like Green Book won Best Picture a couple of years ago, but like Oppenheimer won it Last year? Yeah. Mm. Oppenheimer won it last year, right? That was last year.
Yeah.
And that's like incredibly like crowd pleasing picture. Like it's a really good, I keep saying picture. I'm not like
you pretentious son of a bitch.
They don't make them, they don't make pictures like they used to, let me tell you, Andy.
Back in 1996.
Yeah, it was like I'm Kirk Douglas or something. I remember that picture I started.
Well, it was good though. Like I have to, yeah, go on, sorry.
No, it's interesting. I think it like the what they're saying about it is it's his most accessible film.
Yes, I think it is.
I think
it definitely is.
For a film that is 2 hours and 40 minutes long, it fucking now, zooms.
Yeah. Like that was my big thing. I was like because like I was saying, I vowed very strongly to never, for I believe my exact words were, for as long as I live, I will never watch another Paul Thomas Anderson movie again. And I really thought, because I hated,
we do it all again.
Absolutely not. It was up and down at the start, but like Boogie Nights, Magnolia, Hard Eight, so you know, like a bit up and down, and then had a real kaplunk with the back five, you know, barring Phantom Thread,
yeah, which is,
and I think it caught me on a good day.
Andy, on your best behavior, we had a guest come in.
That's what it was. Who was it that we had?
Peter McGann came in to
do it. Well, in the presence of two film buffs, I had to actually give him my attention. I couldn't watch this one on the fly the morning of.
I still think back to that Magnolia review, and you're like, so I had my laptop in my car at 7 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, we brought somebody here who's taken time out of their day to talk about this movie. Unprofessional bullshit, man.
Yeah, but you know what? Like, I don't know how intelligent my review would have been either way.
And you do the job.
Shouldn't have said it on mic. I see now where I went wrong. That's brilliant.
Yeah. Probably get anybody to come back to the show, to be honest.
It's like, I like that one guy, but that annoying guy is ruining every conversation.
Doesn't like the movies and doesn't watch the movies really brings down the conversation.
Well, look, this is one I did watch, right?
This is my favorite movie of the year.
That's big talk.
Only movie I've been to see in the cinema twice, and because it's harder for me to get out these days, I made the effort. I was going to see it with or without you was the thing. So,
I like that. No pressure.
Yeah, exactly. If you couldn't have made it, I was still going to go and have a great time. It's full of,
I think we should normalize going to the cinema on your own.
Hello. Oh,
I mean, it is kind of normalized, isn't it?
I'm past that now, man. That was like 18-year-old me was like, oh, I can't go because I'm on my own. Now I'm like, best cinema going experience is me on my own. Like,
it actually would be, wouldn't it? I'd actually, even thinking about it now, I'd actually fucking love that. Just if I could go once a week and just fall off into a dark room, watch a movie with nothing else going.
There's absolutely nothing stopping you. Like, you live 10 minutes
imagine,
from the cinema.
Can you imagine being able to do that?
You live 10 minutes from the cinema. You could put the kids to bed and go to like a 8:10 showing of whatever movie you wanted to see.
I need to get it into my system. I need to get that routine started. You know,
here we go. 10 years. Maybe 15 years into podcasting and we're finally getting there. You're like, oh, maybe I should do this. I like movies better when I'm actually watching them. Yeah, you tell me you're doing the work.
But I like the cinema experience because it's honestly like I never think of checking my phone when I'm in the cinema. Whereas if I'm anywhere else, I'll check exactly because you're lit up like a Christmas tree. It's like, do you mind? I quite like that. It keeps me away from myself, and I can just sit and enjoy the movie. But on this movie, I was only saying to you briefly, because I don't know how much we should spoil for you, because it's kind of just out. But I think I'm obviously going to say Leonardo DiCaprio is the best choice for this movie, because I love him dearly. But I feel like this was, I've never really seen him like this in a movie. Do you know what I mean? This sort of character.
Yeah, I mean, his days of being the kind of heartthrob seem to be over, you know?
Yeah.
By, like, kind of leaning more into, like, Jack Nicholson type.
Yes.
You know, persona. I think Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is kind of similar to this, where he's the kind of washed up, doofusy guy, but still has, you know, a fastball in him every once in a while. But they're kind of similar. This performance by him is so, it's so, like, real at times. Like, it's incredibly funny.
That's the thing. I was only saying,
very relatable.
Like, Joaquin Phoenix was considered again, and I'm so glad they didn't go with him, because I think DiCaprio is so much more likable in this role, you know. And he's, and like, yeah, I did think that when I was watching it. I'm like, oh, this is, I feel like this is exactly how I would react in this situation, you know.
Joaquin, like, it's the plot of the movie, if you know, you aren't familiar, it's about a bunch of revolutionaries. They're in a resistance group called French 75 when they were younger, and it kind of, the bulk of the movie takes place when DiCaprio has had a child, and he thinks people from his past are coming to kind of reconcile with him from the stuff he's done when he was younger. And
he's a paranoid stoner.
Yeah, and the big relationship is that he has a daughter, and it's kind of like, you know, he's basically, his previous existence has put her in jeopardy. And there's a whole big theme of, like, you know, girl dad stuff in it. And we're two girl dads here, and that stuff in the movie hits very hard for me.
Yeah.
Like, it is when he's talking about how, you know, he's a single, and that's the other thing, he's a single father in it. And he's talking about the stuff that he can't do for her that, you know, a man could do for a daughter. And I was like, oh, well, I have a wife, and I'm lucky enough to have a wife and, you know, a mother to my daughter. And like, but it still hits home. He's like, I can't do her hair properly. I'm like, I can't fucking do her hair properly. You know, her mom can do the hair tying way better than I can.
What can you,
like, you know?
What can you do as a slight side note?
I can do a low pony, you know.
Oh, look at these, you got the names and everything.
Yeah, but Faye sent me a whole Instagram, I can't do a braid, but she sent me like some Instagram account of like
when they do braids. Kerry shows me all the time this and then this, and I'm like,
it's like I'm looking at a fucking complex math equation. I'm like, wait, what? Like, who's stealing your thoughts?
Slow down. I'm like, she's like, okay, grab the hair. It's like, whoa, slow down. But like, even when she does like a tight bun, and she does this weird flip and rep, I'm like, it's some sort of magic. No, I can only do a loose. It's like a ponytail, just not all the way through.
Yeah.
Like, that's my that,
that's yeah. my extent, really. Like,
which yeah,
but, DiCaprio is incredibly good in it. The movie is incredibly propulsive, and it is kind of like a, I don't know, like a chase movie. It's constant movement, like, you know, he's on the run.
The score has a lot to do with it as well. I find
incredible, and like, you know. The first 40 minutes are kind of like a prologue to the movie, and they're incredibly prescient. You know, it's all about, like, he's been trying to get this movie made for like 15 years. He said he'd been working on it and writing it and on and off and stuff. And it's like he could, it's just weird how, maybe that's the magic of being a special filmmaker, that like it is so relevant to what's happening today, because there's like, you know, shots of like migrant work camps, or, you know, what would you call them? Detention centers, you know, people being fucking just like a bag thrown on their head and marched into a van. Like all that shit is happening in America right now, and it's ramped up in the last 6 months more than ever. And yet he finished making this movie a couple of years ago, like to be released. And you know, like it, you know, so it's just weird how it's hit. Like a lot of the themes in it are hitting so much, and I think it is going to be one of these movies that like people will be looking back at in 10, 20 years. I mean, like that's it's very vague with like what year it is in it, but it seems of the now. Like we know it is a like
it seems very of the time. I think if you look back,
but then again, like, you could tell me it was 10 years from now. You know what I mean? Like, and it would be like, oh yeah, okay, but they're still using phones and cars and shit. Like they're not in space. You know what I mean? Like
one thing that I keep seeing on Twitter is that scene where he's asking those guys, where did the car go? I've seen it everywhere the last like 2 days, and like people just marveling at how well of a like
the whistle
accent, or how the little whistle that he does, like
that hit me the second time watching it around. I was like, oh god, that's good. Like it's like
he's so locked in, you know what I mean? And like, what's weird, I feel like someone his stature or whatever, or his level of fame or the amount of movies he's done, you kind of could see them like going a De Niro route of, you know, just getting a bit tired and not really, you know, it's a good way to make a living. But he still seems very locked in and wanting to do new things, and you know,
De Niro at 50 sort of was still locked in, you know what I mean?
Yeah, true.
You know, like he's had, like De Niro would have had a 30-year career by that stage as well, but he was still not, like he made Heat at 54. Speaking of, Heat 2?
Oh, yeah.
Looks like it's moving ahead.
DiCaprio as De Niro?
No, DiCaprio as Val Kilmer. Older Val Kilmer.
Oh.
Because he's kind of the star of the book. His character is kind of the star of the book. There was a lot of rumors that it was going to be Austin Butler, but it seems like it's going to be DiCaprio.
Sorry.
You can cut this out.
It's the same charger. Oh, your iPhone charges.
Believe it, folks. Anyway, I'm going to keep talking a little bit about
I don't know.
how much I enjoyed the movie. I mean, DiCaprio is incredible in the movie. But I don't even think he's the best performance in the movie. Weirdly.
I like the way he just kept going there, by the way.
Yeah, I'm just gonna keep going and talk about what I like. I don't think DiCaprio is necessarily the best performance, even though he is the star of Fensley.
You think it's Space Nicio?
I think it's the Benicio del Toro, because he's definitely not Space Nicio in this. He's of this
earth. What was Space Nicio from?
Guardians of the Galaxy, of course.
Oh, it's easier.
But it's, you know,
this is my favorite thing I've seen him in.
Yeah, I mean, it's my favorite. It's one of my favorite performances ever. And it's my favorite Benicio del Toro performance. There's something so special about it. And he plays Sensei Sergio St. Carlos, of course. Who I don't want to give it away, because when he shows up in the movie, he is just this warm, calming presence when everything is going fucking crazy at the time. Yeah. Like, because, you know, there's DiCaprio, there's like three orbits, I think, of the movie. There's DiCaprio, there's Benicio, who kind of grounds it when DiCaprio is kind of like losing his mind. And then you have Sean Penn, who plays the antagonist, Steve,
I feel like Sean Penn is just, I feel like Sean Penn is playing Sean Penn as well in this, like, as Psycho. But, like, here's what I don't get, and, like, I don't want to give away too much, but just at the very start, he's held up with a gun, and she's like, no, get it up.
You're
like, I said, not his hands. Get an erection in front of me. And I was like, yeah. This is like 2 minutes in, I was like, and you know what? I've said this before, that PTA is a little pervert as well.
He made boogie nights. Sure. He loves porn, like, you know?
He has an affection for it.
He has an affection for it, like.
There's always a weird little kinky thing in all of his movies. You know,
fucking kink shame, man. Freak. No kink shame. But I think you know, you have a real intense performance from Sean Penn, who's quite funny at times. You have a kind of high, hardwired performance by DiCaprio, who a lot of the time he spends confused or frustrated, you know, trying to get answers and stuff like that. Like, there's a whole 40-minute section of this movie where you don't realize, like, oh, it's just this, because the score never changes. It's just a whole thing happening. And you're like, this, it's like one really long scene that's been going on for like 45 minutes. And it's all to do with DiCaprio trying to get an answer out of somebody. And then that's when Benicio comes in, and he just has this kind of like soothing, you know, comforting effect on
It's kind of like, I can't imagine anyone else in that role.
No.
Which I guess and means that he absolutely nailed it. Like, I feel like that's perfect.
He brought a lot of it to it. You know, I was listening to DiCaprio and PTA talking, and they had an idea for it, and they said, oh, they got Benicio in, and he was like, what about this? And they were like, yeah, totally. Like,
well, that's good.
Yeah. And it's, you know what? It's an
let me ask you.
Movie as well. Like,
well, that's, I think, why I actually liked it more than other PTA Snoozefest, because there is there's just a lot going on. There's a lot. It's up. It's not like it's entertaining, but it's energetic. It's like it does. I thought you were bullshit because you say all long movies zip, and I'm always like, no, they don't. But this one, I have to say, I didn't feel the time go at all.
Like, it's kind of like chunks, you know what I mean? Like, it's 40-minute prologue, maybe 20 minutes after that of setup, then there's a 40-minute section. And then you're kind of, like, barreling towards the end of the movie, which is a kind of another, like, 40-minute set piece to do with fucking really fast cars and this road that, like, exists, but, like, you're like, surely they made this road for this movie. But like, no, this is a real road that is like in the middle of the desert, and it's like the fucking hilliest thing you'll ever see. Like, imagine that was part of your commute, driving that road. Like, I was getting a bit nauseous with them going up and down on the hills and stuff like.
Yeah, because the camera's so low. Like,
yeah, it's so low right to the ground. The
it's like you feel like you feel like
it's incredibly impressive.
It's like three little mini movies, like.
Yeah, and there's the right level of absurdity within it. You know, there's this cabal of like white rich people called the Christmas Adventure Club that like they talk absolute nonsense, but it's so funny. It's
so it's I thought so, when they said Christmas Adventure Club, like, it mustn't be actually. Like, oh no, they worship Saint Nick.
Yeah. Hail Saint Nick, of course.
Yeah, it's like, I wasn't ready for that. have you given it a letterbox review? That's one that I five
babies. You gotta be five.
I think I gave it 4 or 4.5, something like that.
Four
is good, Terry. Four is excellent. Exactly.
Let me see.
A PTA's man, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but even let me look at my diary here on Letterboxd if
please.
The bloody apple never open up.
Oh diary, the movie was so good again.
Let me see the last thing I gave a 4. Burn After Reading, that's a 4.
Is it?
Yeah, it is.
Was it that Brad Pitt?
Brad Pitt, George Clooney. Yes, and I tell you what, I watched it. It's a, you know, Coens. I'm working my way through the Coen filmography.
No, George Clooney. The Coen talk.
You want peak Clooney, Andy? That is peak. But looks, like, look-wise. I don't think he's ever looked better.
Well, that's all I'm talking about. That's all I'm talking about.
Yeah. Brad Pitt looks weird on purpose.
It does.
But, like, it's very odd.
I was watching something else as well. Can I talk about it?
Please.
I've been watching, well, as you know, I finally watched A Real Pain, which
still I like that there.
I don't know. Like, I think you'd like it too. You know, as you said, you like a bit of coke.
I like the one that has some coke.
But it was good. It was exactly what I thought it would be. And it was one of those late nights when I was up feeding the baby. I was like, oh, stick this on. I was like, I've made a habit of sticking on like a movie, you know? But amazing. Also we've been watching Squid Game season 2.
Oh, what do you think?
I'm a bit torn on it. I think it's a combination of being really good and really boring. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it took 3 episodes to get to the game. I know they're setting things up, but I find the dialogue to be just like I was watching an episode
dubs
last night.
Are you subs?
I am subs.
Thank God.
Yeah, but I do find, like, I was watching one yesterday, and it's like the game bit was like really interesting, but all the talking in the bunk was like, there's about 45 minutes of just over to these two. You're like, all right.
I'm the opposite. Like, they did an incredible job of like making me care for like all these brand new people, like the doofus son and his mom.
Yeah, like,
you know, or the
I cared for them, but I think you're frozen. Or am I frozen?
No, you're frozen. How about that, Zelensky? Huh?
Oh, hold on. Yeah.
Yeah, you're frozen.
The fucking nightmare. The quality is so bad here. I'm barely catching what you're saying.
It's okay.
Go on anyway.
What did you not think the first couple of episodes with the guy?
There was interesting bits.
Like, I remember he
was the best thing about it.
He's great. Like, he's fantastic.
Yeah, he was the best thing about the first few episodes. Yeah. But like I'm enjoying it. Like, it's something I look forward to. But there's, I just find, because it's a bit like, I don't know how to take it, because that bad guy with the purple hair is like so unintimidating.
Yeah. I'm like, somebody just fucking so, like, gave
shore
him,
like, up. Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of like weird kind of stuff in it where you're just like, huh. So I don't know. Like I'm enjoying it, but I just find.
What games have they done?
I think they've done 3 games at this point. They did
the relay one. I thought the relay thing was really quite gripping.
The relay one?
Where there's 5 of them together and you have to like walk together and do the different games. Yeah, that was really well done. Did they do the merry-go-round one yet?
Yeah, that was the one I just finished.
That was good.
Yeah. Which I thought was good. So like, I like all that stuff. I just find, I'm like, oh, it just got too much. Like, you know, it struck me as like, did you ever see the thing of like the South Park guys talking about how they make a show and it's like, you can't have, and then this happens, and then this happens, and it has to be, then this happens, and therefore this happens.
Because
and I felt like this wasn't that. I felt like this is, and this is their thing, and this is their thing, and then this is their thing, and then this is what happened to him. And it's like, just these kind of like, I think they're trying to give me too many characters' backstories. Do you know what I mean? Like, just stick to less, but give me more of that. You know what I mean?
No, I don't know. I'd rather they attempt that at least than just be like, here's a bunch of randos that are going to die. Like, you know, you have to try and make me care about
You do have to care about them, yeah. But I mean, I'll still finish it.
I would keep going with it. I watched all three. I didn't regret.
I heard season 3 is not as good.
I think 2 and 3 are very good, but like 1 was excellent. Okay. I think that's where I would class it. Now, you know, 1 was like really top notch. 2 and 3 are a step down, but better than a lot of other stuff that's out there, you know?
Yeah. I'm trying to just watch like new things and not. I think I've reached the end of my Always Sunny reruns.
Did you watch the new ones?
Yes, I did actually. Now let me ask you first. What did you think of the new season of Always Sunny?
I kind of liked it, in spite of myself, because I thought the first episode was dog shit.
Yeah.
So maybe that was a good point for me to start on. And then I can't remember what the second episode was, but when they're the Pepper episode.
Yeah.
Microdose, yeah. I thought that was so funny. That was like, this is the Always Sunny I want. Fucking mental, wacky, balls.
Chaos.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like,
they had
a couple like that. They had the Succession episode, and then they had the dog track episode. And I thought those were like three high points of the movie, of the season. I'm at a loss. I mean, the last two were related to like The Bachelor, right? Was that?
Yeah.
But even in the last episode where like they're not really in it that much, the gang, it's just Frank. Like, I thought the cock chew stuff was terrible. But then, like, when they cut to the guys at the game show at the end and they're all, like, green and can't talk.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, okay. Like, you know.
But you know what? I have to admit, though, like, when I watched it back twice. I have liked every season of Always Sunny that I've seen. And I didn't really like this one. And I know, like you had said before about the previous one where they went to Ireland that season, you weren't mad on. I actually really liked that one. But this one, I was like, I just noticed myself not laughing. You know what I mean? I kind of was I don't know if I find them too jarring.
They look weird.
They look weird. And I'm just
except for Charlie. But he kind of looks a little weird as well.
Charlie just looks older. But I kind of find Dee, Mac, and Dennis especially. Actually, Dee used to be the one where you'd be like, Jesus. Whereas now I look at Mac or Dennis and I'm like, oh my God. I don't know. Like, it's because I've gone through the series so much that you just realize how much better those characters were. I feel like they're all just too much an extension of their real personalities now. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's Glenn a bit hyped up. It's Rob hyped up. You know, like, it's not, like...
There you go.
I don't know. It just seems a bit, like, flat.
He's gone again. Something jokes.
Oh, you're gone. You're frozen. Not me. You're the one who's frozen. When you come back, I just want you to know that it's you who's frozen, not me.
I'm back. Yeah, I mean, I liked it fine. You know, I thought last season was not bad. It was not great. And the one before with Ireland, I thought was awful. I thought it was really bad.
I thought the last Bachelor episode, though, was very, very bad. Like, again, I'm like, where's the laughs? Like, it was just...
And again, they seem to be, like, try and do it every couple of seasons where they like go sincere. Like the whole thing with Frank. They try and go sincere.
Yeah.
And it's like Frank is like, I love you or whatever. And I'm like, and punchline is, nope, just end the episode. And you're like, oh, okay.
That's it.
And in loving memory of her. And it's like, that's nice. But like,
yeah.
Okay. So that's it. Same with like when Mac was finding his pride or whatever. And, you know, it was good acting like by Danny DeVito when he has the tears in his eyes and stuff. But I'm also like, lost. Like,
yeah. I've seen a thing.
That's not what I'm watching Thomas Sunny for. Like,
no, it's not. Like, just give me the absurd. Like, they could take a page out of Seinfeld's philosophy. No hugging, no learning.
That means the show was like literally pitched as, or it was like described as Seinfeld on crack, because it was like Seinfeld way darker. You know, these
Yeah.
Three guys and a girl.
Crazy people. Yeah,
exactly. Like,
yeah. I don't know. Yeah, it couldn't quite hold up. I mean, there was parts of it that were funny, but I'd say it was one of my least favorite ones.
You had said to me, though, you watched The Irishman.
Yes.
Again.
And I've watched Casino then. And then I watched Goodfellas. When I'm at Mafia Tear at the minute.
Yes, Andy.
It's amazing.
I got copies of both Casino and Goodfellas from one of our lovely listeners, Thomas. He gave me a big haul of Blu-rays.
Nice.
So I got them there. Just what waiting. A guy. Wow. Great.
Casino, like, I have to say, like, watching them all in succession, like, The Irishman was, it was the third time I'd watched The Irishman. And because I kept seeing clips coming up on my TikTok. Yeah. It's like, oh, that was a good scene. So in a lot of Al Pacino, dare. Like, it's kind of like,
they would dare.
And it's like, there's loads of bits that I picked up that I didn't pick up. Gino
is so fucking good. Like, in that movie.
He's great in it.
He's so good.
He's really good.
What a white guy, you know? That's your money.
Yeah.
Eating his ice cream with Steven.
Yeah. Like, oh, come on, what I say.
Yeah.
And the bit where he's like, I'm done talking about this. Love that bit. It's like my favorite scene.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that Stephen Graham said, like, that wasn't planned. Jumping him when he was eating the ice cream.
I love that.
Yeah. Then so I watched that, and then Casino I hadn't seen in ages, and I really enjoyed it. Like, I think
I need to watch it again. I haven't watched it in a good 10 years, maybe.
I think you'll really. Obviously, you like it anyway. But when I out of the three, I know because Goodfellas had been so oversaturated, I've seen it long. Irishman was a bit long. Casino was the one I enjoyed the most out of those three.
Really?
This watch around. And I think De Niro, like, Pesci obviously is like crazy in it. But De Niro's character in it, like, you see a lot more of De Niro being like, you know, where he's trying not to make a scene at the restaurant with Sharon Stone. He'd be like, get the fuck out of here. You know, like, he's way more, like, through gritted teeth in this movie, you know. And I love seeing that De Niro, where he's like, don't make me fuck, you know, like, he's on the edge.
You would love Midnight Run, which is...
We seen it.
When did you see
it? Didn't we? We did it for the pod, didn't we? The Buddy movie?
We didn't do it for the pod, did we?
Yeah, we did. We did an episode on
Midnight Run.
We definitely, De Niro and the guy Son of a Bitch from the other movie.
Groden.
Was it Groden? Oh, no, I'll think of someone else. Yeah, the one. It was like late 80s. They're on the run. De Niro's like a hitman or something like that.
No, he's a bounty hunter.
Yeah.
Did we do it? Jesus,
for the pod.
Yeah, there's so much of that. There's so much of that where it's like, oh, my brain is mush, but like, there's so much of that where he's like, don't you?
Yeah, it's that little, like, don't make me, you know. But like, and then Pesci just been like, you know.
Like, don't Pesci's measure up, like, my, I actually, that's all you're holding out for. Like, squishing the eye and the vice grip. Like.
Yeah, and he's like, You make me torture you for 2 fucking days for that prick. And like, or like that guy with the pen, like De Niro's like, hey, is this your pen? He's like, yeah. And he's like, oh, I just thought you might want it. I didn't know if you want to lose it. It's a nice pen. He's like, why don't you shove it up your ass? And then Pesci grabs the pen, like, right in the neck, like, because he's so short and his little arms, like, so good.
I mean, it's always going to be Goodfellas of that three for me. It's always going to be Goodfellas.
Yeah. And yeah, like, I mean, even, I should say, like, overall it is, but yeah.
I've seen the movie so many times. But the last time it was on TV and I was watching it and I was like, he really was doing shit. Like, there's so many, like, bravura choices that he makes. Like, it's like the bit where it's like, they go and they're, I think it's the Copa, and it's like the comedian's like, take my wife, please.
Yeah.
And like, that bit is happening. And then the audio of that keeps going, and it cuts to them like in the airport, just walking in. It's like the Air France robbery or whatever. Like,
and it's like
I was like, what kind of a choice would you make that to keep the like Buddy Rich or whatever it is, the comedian, to keep his stand up comedy going against the backdrop of these guys just coming in and like robbing a bunch of money. I was like, just little choices like that. You're like, like he really is just thinking 10 steps ahead, or you know, he's coming
out
of
the sort of choice. Yeah, like that's the sort of choice that you don't make with committee. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like
that's a Marty. Like, that's
this
a Marty
is
choice.
A yeah. It, this is a little touch on me in there, and like even the scene before in the Copa scene where that's all choreographed and all one scene going in through the
like,
back,
I mean,
and all that. Like,
that for me is like that's the very flashy one, and of course you're gonna remember that. Mm. But when it was, I was like, oh, like that little fucking
touch.
Or even like the opening scene. Is it the opening scene or when they open the trunk when the train are upstate and it's like just red everywhere, like Billy Bat's fighting, like, oh, you're in hell. Like this, you're with these three guys, they're in hell and they're dead, you know, just stuff like that where you're like, it's redundant to say it, like obviously he's a special filmmaker, but like when you're looking at it, you're like, oh, man, these kind of, this is why, that's the kind of stuff that makes you the best in my, because anybody can do a Steadicam shot. You know, not as good as Scorsese, but anybody can do it. But it's all these other little choices that really elevate them. Like,
I think
I didn't
want to
get
like
blood on
all...
your floor. I'm sorry, Henry. I didn't want to get blood on your floor.
I mean, so like, I have to say, like, I'm such a mafia mark. I have to admit, like, I really am into that whole scene. I'm just like, and not necessarily like the crime part, just the whole little organization and like, oh, we're opening up the books, we're gonna make it, and all this like weird brotherhood thing. Like, there's something about it. It's just, it draws me in, you know.
You know, I mean, so what's next on your list for a mafia movie?
I'd like to see A Bronx Tale. I haven't seen that.
It's okay. I think De Niro directed.
What should I say?
Let me have a look here. Obviously, Godfather. We did one and two.
Yeah.
You know, Irishman's good. Does it have to be Italian mob?
Depends. What kind of mob are you talking? I think it does have to be Italian mob, to be honest.
Okay.
What else is there? Bronx Tale's what, like a 6 out of 10?
Yeah, probably. It's, you know... I watched American Gangster recently.
Oh yeah,
and like, it's fine. You know, it's very rewatchable. It's kind of a movie that is like, I always describe it as aggressively okay. And I think A Bronx Tale is like not even as good as that. You know,
right? The same. It's kind of really like Scorsese. You know, nail it best. You know.
It's, yeah, and it is kind of like, that people are like, oh, that's all he does. And it's like, he has like three out of like, you know, 40 movies. He has three big mob movies. Like, it's not.
It's true.
I guess if you count Gangs in New York, maybe, but like, that is.
But do you think, though, even though it's not a mob movie, am I looking for another style Scorsese movie?
Maybe, like, you know what, you should maybe try, like,
Raging Bull or.
Mean Streets it's like low level mob stuff, and it's young De Niro and Keitel, like, and it's, you know, that it kind of has that first, it's one of his first movies, and it's like that shot of like De Niro in a bar. He's kind of like the young reckless guy, Johnny Boy, but he has a camera strapped to his chest, so it's like looking up at him as he's going. So it's this weird kind of like. Like a bird's eye view. It's like you're there with him walking through the bar and stuff like that. Like a good Scorsese, a really like underseen one. I first watched it in college, and it's called After Hours, where it's a New York movie. It's, you know, Griffin Dunne.
You would know
him to see, because he was in lots of stuff in the 80s. But it's basically he goes downtown in New York on a, I think it's a Saturday night or a Friday night after work, to try and hook up with this girl, and basically can't seem to find his way home, no matter how hard he tries, and like runs right. into all these crazy characters, and it's kind of like set over the course of one night. And okay. it's one of those ones by Scorsese where people are now like, oh, this is one of his masterpieces that he's made.
Yeah, yeah.
But like nobody saw it at the time.
Right.
Not gangster.
Have you seen it? Did you say?
I saw it in college, and it's like one now. Every right. time I see it, I'm like, oh, this is so fucking good. Because like, but, it's yeah, funny, but then, it's weird, it's crazy. But then
what was that one that we watched with Ed Sattler?
Bringing Out the Dead.
I really didn't like that.
That's a hard one. It's a hard one.
It's a very hard watch.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, it's so gruesome, or it's so violent, or it's so whatever.
It's just kind of depressing. Like,
it depresses me. I feel like I need to go out into the sunshine after watching it. You know what I mean?
Considering the other Nick Cage movies that we did, that one was the hardest one, I think, to be like,
yeah,
it's not an easy sit. Like, as opposed to, like, you know, we did Snake Eyes or Matchstick Men, or, you know, like.
I think, I don't know if I was saying it to you. I might say to you in a voice message where, like, I was watching that. Very good, by the way, the documentary on Netflix, the AKA Charlie Sheen. And I kind of started watching it, and I was just kind of like, ah, it's easy. Like, I don't particularly care about him or his story or whatever, but I'll just stick it on. And it was really good. It drew me right in. But when he talked about meeting Nick Cage the first time, he's like, I see this guy. He's talking to a really pretty girl at a club. And he just kept saying, what do you think of this watch? He just kept asking, what do you think of this watch? And he's like,
watch.
That was Nick. You know.
I'd love to see a documentary of Nick Cage.
Oh, my God.
Like,
with everyone in.
Just the anecdotes.
He's a fucking wild man.
The anecdotes of, like, he showed me the T-Rex skull. I couldn't believe it.
He seemed to be a really, like, Charlie Sheen. Now, I don't know if I can tell you about this, unless you want to watch the documentary yourself.
I'm not going to watch it.
But, like, he seemed to have a bad influence on him. But, I mean, Charlie Sheen is Charlie Sheen. But he said at the end, he's like, oh, and also, I'm gay. And I was like,
Charlie Sheen?
I wasn't ready for that. Yeah, he said, like, he's like, you get to a point, you know, like, when he was at his sort of, like, Tiger Blood era.
Bisexual? Like, pansexual? Like, kind of,
yeah,
like...
it was something like, yeah, so sorry, it wasn't gay. But he was, but he basically said, a couple of years ago, he just started just having sex with men and women. And he's like,
He has HIV, right? Yeah, and I remember hearing that it was, like, he got HIV... from a Brazilian, like, she-male or something. Now, this is Charlie Sheen, don't sue me. But it was kind of like, that was the rumor they had died from HIV as well. Like, and I remember just being like, what world is this man living in? Like,
it's not a revelation. And I thought there was a big reveal.
No, I remember hearing that at the time when he was diagnosed, because it was like,
oh, okay.
Considering, you know, that was his whole persona for like 2.5 Men, was literally the show with him having sex with beautiful women every episode, essentially.
Did you ever watch it?
I've seen probably every episode that has Charlie Sheen in it on that show.
You've seen every episode that has Charlie Sheen in it?
Not the Ashton Kutcher ones, but probably everyone that has Charlie Sheen in it, yeah.
How have you seen that much? Did you like it? Did you watch it?
No, I didn't like it. I just was up late smoking weed, and I watched it. That was it, like, you know?
Well, I think I've maybe seen, like, 2 or 3 episodes.
I could tell you a whole season's arc. There was a whole year where he was going to get married in one of the seasons, like... Ryan Stiles shows up as John Cryer's ex-wife's new husband.
The guy he lives with,
his brother, Al, John Cryer,
and he's bald in the documentary, but he looks so bald that he looks like he's wearing a bald cap. You know what I mean? Like,
so I was watching, you're right. Like,
it's so smooth. I was watching it. Okay, I'm like, I know he is bald, but he looks like this is like a bit.
No, I don't think he is bald.
But he seemed to know him the best. Like, he seemed to know exactly what he was like and what he was, what, you know.
Yeah, he's like, I think
wait for him to show up. Is he going to show up? But he knows what makes him tick. You know what I mean?
I think they had a bit of a acrimonious end. Because I remember, like, Shane was tweeting when they fired him off the show.
Yeah.
Shane was like, oh, he's a snake. You know, Cryer is a snake or whatever like that. Like, and fuck yeah. Chuck Lorre or whatever like that. But, like,
yeah, Chuck Lorre was talking.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird that, like, after that, after 2.5 Men, he made some really big deal with Comedy Central. It was like an unprecedented, where it was like he had that show Anger Management, you know, the the Jack Nicholson, the Adam Sandler movie, but it was, you know, repurposed for him, and it did 10 episodes, and then the first three episodes were really high rated, so Comedy Central renewed it for 100 episodes. It was, and they paid, like, it was like syndication. It was straight to syndication, because you have to get to 100 episodes to get syndication. And then, but they made the deal, but then the drop off in ratings after the first season was so spectacular that it was like, once they went to 100 episodes, they were like, right, burn it, dump it, you know, we're done. This is, nobody is getting any, once episode 100 was done, it was like, we're done, finished, we're not even thinking about anymore. Why did we do this?
It seemed like giving him money, though, was the worst thing for him. You know what I mean?
He was the highest paid TV star. He was the highest paid TV star, which is mad.
About that.
Comedy was mad. Big business in the early 2000s, like, you know?
Don't even get me started. Bring it all back. I miss everything, Terry. I'm so nostalgic for the 90s and the 2000s.
What sitcoms are there now?
Sitcoms, there isn't any really, is there?
No.
There's actually none. And how can you, how can there not be? You know what I mean? There's stuff on Netflix, sure, and there's a lot of, I say a lot of it is like animated now and stuff like that, you know, like that's where the sitcom is, but.
The latest Rick and Morty is, whole season has aired. I watched the first one. I was like, oh, there's new Rick and Morty. Like, it's not on Netflix yet, but I watched it. I think it's on Channel 4, or maybe it's gone off it now. But I watched the first one, and it was, like, fine. And then, the episode kind of ended on, like, you know the way they do the little clips at the end?
Yeah.
And I was like, the joke had ended, and I was like, oh, okay. And then I'm like, is that just gone now? You know, is...
Yeah.
You know,
like the spark.
Yeah, the spark really seems to be gone.
You can tend to with a show like that. It's like 50. I mean, it's very impressive that they got the people to do the voices and to sound so much like them. Like, that's incredible. And not only do that, but to be able to project and act and, you know, like not just have the voice, but to believably be them is really impressive to me.
You know, it's every once in a while you'd be like, oh, that's not Justin Roiland.
Yeah.
Mostly for Rick rather than Morty, weirdly enough.
Yeah, it's an odd one. But you know what I was thinking as well? It's like, how mad, when I watch a show from the 80s or 90s or early 2000s or whatever, and it has a laughter track, I remember I was watching something with Joni a couple of years ago. She's like, who's laughing? thinking, you know, and I remember myself when I first seen
the live studio audience.
Yeah, and I was kind of explaining that and all this, and it tells me when to laugh.
Yeah, exactly.
But when I see a show,
Big Bang Theory.
Oh my god! But any show that's from 2010 onwards, if there's a laugh track in it, it seems so weird to me now. If there's a show now that came out in 2025 with a laughter track, I would just, it'd be like, you're kind of like, I would just look at the person next to me like, what the fuck is this?
I think it might be refreshing.
Back 30 years ago, I've seen some stuff, and maybe this show was just particularly bad. I don't remember what it was, but I was like, oh, it's so fucking cheap. I feel like I've got a headache.
What's weird is I watched the Frasier, the reboot of Frasier.
Oh yeah. Frasier,
and it was like that has a laugh track in it.
And the
The jokes are just not good. It's not the laugh track's fault. It's just the jokes.
Yeah, but doesn't that? But like, do you think that like a live audience can really elevate a joke? You know, like the scene in Seinfeld, like, you know, where they're at the table, like the ping pong, hole in one, huh? You know, like something like that.
Yeah,
like
it gives it
loads of energy and stuff like that. Whereas like, but when it's a bad joke and there's a laughter track, it feels like it doubles down on the badness. Because you feel like you're in some weird parallel universe. It was like, that's not funny though.
Because we've seen so many shows that take the piss out of those things. So you've seen where it's like The Simpsons being like, what, already?
What, already?
Exactly. So like, and you've seen live action shows do this. It seems like
WandaVision making fun of it.
Yeah, or like, it's like, it feels like an episode of Twin Peaks at times or something where you're like, what the fuck?
It seems a little surreal, like, you know, and I think they did it, didn't they do it for like that 90s show reboot or something like that?
Maybe it made it one episode.
I think I watched one episode out of respect
for Kurt Wood.
The impact, that 70s show, basically for Kurt Woods, and to a slightly lesser extent, Deborah Jo. But it was just because I loved that 70s show so much in my 20s. And I was like, okay. Man, it was so weird. It was like, ugh, no.
But again, the jokes are good.
I think that new Office reboot is supposed to be really good.
I've watched 8 episodes. I was going to recommend it to you. It's called The Paper.
I hear it's very good.
I would look, you have my Now TV subscription. I would recommend give it a whirl.
Let me ask for your login details again there too.
No problem. Great. I'm 8 episodes into the 10 episodes. It's actually like a warm bath at times. There's a couple of characters.
I heard it feels like an episode of The Office. Like it feels like that world.
They do, definitely. There's one character in the show that feels like she is in her own show. Mm. Like she's completely disconnected. Like she's Italian.
Right.
And it's almost by design, but it seems like it's the type of character that, like, she kind of grates on me in it. But then by season 2, you could see her kind of like being folded in and her rhythms getting in sync with everybody else. But otherwise, I think, you know, it's quite good. You know?
It's a show that, like, because I recently did a rewatch of the entire U.S. Office.
Like, even 8 and 9?
A month or two ago. Yes, and that's what I wanted to talk about, because I always in my head thought, like, okay, he leaves at the end of 7, or maybe the start of 8, Steve Carell.
It's 6 episodes before the end of 7 is when he leaves.
Yeah.
Because do the 4 episodes of Will Ferrell, and then the double finale of the interviews.
Yeah, so that was all good stuff. And then I always thought in my head, okay, then season 8 is a bit less good, and then season 9 is worse still.
You're correct.
I didn't think so this time. I thought season 8 was dog shit, and I actually thought season 9 was actually much better.
Season 8 is dog shit because it's really unfocused, and it is all over the show. Mm. And it's like, how many days do we have Spader for? He's here, and then he's gone for 5 episodes, and then we have Kathy Bates in, and, you know,
it didn't know what 9, it was in season
9 is more focused. 9 is definitely more focused. I don't think
when
it's
they bring in your
good.
Man Clark from Hot Tub Time Machine, I think he's a great addition. You know, he fits right in. And if you, but like, I totally forgot that they made Andy a total prick again, because he's such a lovable goof in like season 4 to 7.
Is it 8? This the one where he's a prick and he like leaves on the boat and stuff like that, like.
I think that's 8, or maybe the end of 8.
By the end of 9, he's back to being the lovable Andy.
I don't know. I was watching it, and I couldn't even remember. But
I remember the finale. You didn't like it at all because there wasn't enough Steve Carell, and I was like,
"Oh my god!" I watched it. I watched this again. I'm so glad you brought this up, because had Steve, like the big thing, like, okay, Steve Carell's big show, and it's like, here's the ending, and we have Steve Carell back. It felt like Steve Carell has, like, what, a line? He's on but screen. But here's the problem. He's on screen. No, he's got to be in it more. He's in about five scenes, either in the background or in there, and he has maybe one line in all of those scenes.
That's what she said.
It's like he just showed up on set and they were like, oh, Steve, would you like to come in? Like, oh, sure. We're not that prepared, but come and stand there.
Andy, like, they probably were like, we have Steve for 4 hours.
That's the least they could do.
Because he's in the middle of shooting one of his many movies that he is in now.
They should have worked that out better. They could totally bring him back.
They could bring him back to the paper. Like, you know what I mean? He could be the... You get him now.
Now he's crawling back. Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Whereas he was too much of a big shot the last time. Well, that's what she said. It was like Steve Carell. It wasn't even like Michael Scott. I get it. He's more grounded. He's with Holly.
He looked great at first, though.
Yeah, he did. He looks great with the grey hair and the sort of round glasses and stuff. But I was furious. That episode and Jim and Pam's wedding episode was just makes my fucking... Well, really the wedding episode made my blood boil.
The Jim and Pam episode, I watched that again.
I was listening to
a podcast that is called Stick the Landing, where it's there's the show, there's the finale, you know, Land the Plane. And they were at the office one, but they were saying the Jim and Pam episode should have been the end of the show. That should have been the finale.
Oh, in season six, like when they get married.
Yeah, when they get married. That's how they should have ended the show. And I went back and watched it and I was like, I didn't really like that episode. But then you wouldn't have Threat Level Midnight. Yeah, all that stuff. I was like that episode is really uneven for me, and this is the genius of the show where it was like, and yet when they cut to Jim and Pam on the boat and they've already been married and it's like just the two of them there.
Yeah.
I think she's looking away and he kind of just looks into the camera like so content. I was like, fuck.
Yeah.
They got it.
Son of a bitch. That's the magic of John Krasinski, Kerry. That's what that is. That's big Johnny. That's what that is.
That freaky piece of shit.
He's great.
That lanky streak of piss.
But one thing I did notice watching it back was like, oh, I don't know if I actually... Because Kerry's a big anti-Jim and Pat. Like, they drive her mental. And I'm like, that's nice. And I'm like, it's actually better once they are together, because then you don't have the whole, will they, won't they? But then I was watching it again, I'm like, oh, they are kind of annoying, you know what I mean? But like, I know they're the kind of focal, they're the rock of the show, and I think they're at times really good. But
a best season. You have to pick a best season of The Office.
Well, that's, I'll tell you, Terry, it's the same answer to every series, and that's season 7. It's the best series of every. It's the best season of every series.
This theory does not hold water.
Seinfeld, Simpsons.
Not Seinfeld.
70s show.
Are you thinking Seinfeld?
Office. Always Sunny, Fat Mac. You know what I mean?
Best one of Always Sunny.
Season 7 is when they're having fun with it. You know what I mean? They're established. They're just before they get sick of it. You know what I mean? You know, Family Guy,
I don't think 7. 7 is a great one because it's a return to form. Because I think 6 is particularly bad for The Office.
Yeah.
6 is kind of all over the place. 7, and they knew it was Carell's last one, so they kind of are playing the hits, or they're pulling out these kind of special episodes or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, the whole 6, like, big picture manager, day-to-day manager kind of sucks. Yeah. And I would say of The Office, I think season... 4 maybe?
When, 4 is so good.
When the two, is that when the two offices get melded?
I think that was 3. Was it?
Was it?
I think so. 3. 4 is like when he's with Jan and it's like the dinner party and the fun run and, you know, that sort of stuff. I think season 3 is when it really established itself. I think that was when they brought in that other branch where like
Yeah.
You know, the convict episode. Oh, actually, you could be right. Actually, season four, I think, is when I wasn't thinking of that one where Jim goes away. Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
that was the one you showed me, and it was like the convict one was one of the first episodes of the show I'd ever seen, and it's the fucking one of the laughs.
Don't let that over.
He's like, you would be the bell of the ball. Like him, please.
Don't drop the soap. you were actually he's like, oh, and you, my friend, would be the bell of the ball. And you were like, you were clapping almost like a seal. It was like your hands and feet were clapping at the same time.
Michael, please.
That's so funny.
We're kind of rambling here. We're getting to the end of it.
Oh, shit, yeah. This is a podcast right now.
Yeah, exactly. It's not just us catching up. So maybe we'll tie a bow on it.
I can see and hear you so clearly now. But for the first half an hour of this episode, I'm like, just nod. Like, I think I caught most of that. I like this fucking technology. But I should say to the folks, like, we're not officially back yet. But to be frank, we just missed doing it.
Yes. This kind of happened last time we had children. We both had kids, you know, in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of did a couple of these just random drop in before we got back into the rotation. So we're just warming up, you know.
Yeah.
You know, just exercising the muscles.
Just greasing the wheels.
Andy's back tentatively in the office, who knows when. And then we'll post something up on the old socials when we can actually get into the regular weekly rotation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have our next mini-series lined up for the Patreon, of course.
What is it again?
Oh, you can't remember.
Matt Damon, of course.
Good ones. So listen, don't watch
Dogma. Is Dogma on that list?
We hadn't decided, but I think we said we're going to put it in, I think. Because it was like, it's the 20th or the 30th anniversary this year.
Wow, great.
No, 25th anniversary, I think.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, 25th. So I was thinking that, yeah, I wanted to put it in because I hadn't seen it in a while. And I know we both like it, but it would just be interesting. Yeah. It's not to convince you what's so great about that movie. Because I'm picking a lot of ones you probably hadn't seen. Like, you haven't seen Rounders, Mr. Ripley.
No.
You said you hadn't seen The Departed. Like,
I've seen it once, but I don't remember the thing.
Yeah, so don't watch that. That's part of your Scorsese run. Watch it. Don't pull.
That's Simpsons one, right?
Yeah.
I said, don't, but don't.
So we got a bunch of good stuff lined up with him. He's a very interesting actor, and he's had a long and illustrious career. You get to see the phases of him. We'll get a Born in there. I think we're going to go with one, probably, the first Born.
Yeah. For my money, the best trilogy on the market today, the Born trilogy. Forget about the fourth.
Interesting that there's, I was going to say, it's technically five in the series. He's in four of them, but yeah.
It was until they ruined it. It's the only trilogy that I like.
The one with Renner is pretty good now in retrospect. But the fourth.
That worm.
Apparently he's fucking great in the new Knives Out movie.
This guy survived
being crushed by a snowplow.
What? In real life?
Yeah, that's like he was like near death.
Is that why he's so sure? He almost got me. Just crushed me a little bit.
No, like literally like a year or two ago, like he was fucking crushed, like pretty much every bone in his body was like broken.
What?
He was like near death. Yeah. If only we still had the Jeremy Renner app, we could be discussing it.
Well, I don't know what it is. I can take him or leave. I'm sorry,
he's good.
Jeremy.
He's a real gem.
Wish he was taller.
Why?
I don't
know.
Well,
there's your outro song. Anyway, you've queued yourself up nicely for I wish.
I'm fine with that.
I wish. Well, folks, look, we're on main feed, but it's, you know, I'll throw it out there to you. I love yous.
Yeah, thanks, there he is.
Thanks for, you know, tuning in, if you have. If it's just me and Andy having a chat, I had a great time. I had a great time.
This,
so,
this is worth it for the chat alone, Terry. I really need this.
Even on Sunday when we met up. Even on Sunday at the cinema, you're like, well, I'm going to go. I'm like,
no.
In the car. Like, I'll drive you home. We can have a chat at least. Like,
yeah. Imagine if we just literally showed up. Hey, sat down, said nothing, and then left. Goodbye.
Come on, Terry. He has a cowboy hat. That's about as much as I got out of him.
It's okay. What did he say? Didn't have a chance.
Didn't have a chance to ask him.
Well, look, on that note,
folks.
We'll be back. I'm going to try and drop some sort of solo record at some point. I
literally on my list of things to talk about on my solo record, it's my notes app. It was like the paper, it's always sunny. The new, like, a lot of stuff, all the Comber stuff, like,
yeah.
I'll bring it up another day, but streaming services and their lack of movies that do be on it.
Mm-hmm,
anyway,
mm-hmm.
But I had that and I just.
Another time, perhaps.
Yeah, I just never got around to doing my solo cast, so, you know.
We'll get there, folks, but, But yeah, thanks very much for listening. Word, and, I haven't done a home record in a while. So I hope this is intelligible. And I'm going to try and beef up the audio, folks. It's too late to tell you now. It's at the end. But if I couldn't do it, I apologize profusely for the quality. But hey, it's free, huh?
Hopefully we get a couple of clips over the socials as well. You never know.
Yeah, exactly. Something. All right.
Okay. Be good.
Folks, I will... goodbye.
Hello, I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl who looked good, I would call her. Wish I had a rabbit in a hat with a bat, a 6'4" and baller. I wish I was like 6'9" so I could get with Leo. She, cause she don't know me, but yo, she's really fine. You know, I see her all the time, everywhere I go. And even in my dreams, I can scheme a way to make her mine. Cause I know she's living fat. Her boyfriend's tall and he plays ball. So how am I gonna compete with that? Cause when it comes to playing basketball, I'm always last to be picked. And in some cases, never picked at all. So I just lean up on the wall or sit up in the bleachers with the rest of the girls who came to watch they man ball. Dag y'all, I never understood black. While the jocks get the fly girls and me, I get the hood rats. I tell them scat, skittles, kabobble. Got hit with a bottle, but you're in a hospital for talking that mess. I confess it's a shame when you living in a city that's the size of a box and nobody knows your name. Glad I came to my senses, like quick, got sick to my stomach. Overcome it by thoughts of me and her together, right? So when I asked her out, she said I wasn't that type. I wish I was a little bit taller, I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl who looked good, I would call her. Wish I had a rabbit in a hat with a bat. I wish I was a little bit taller, I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl who looked good, I would call her. Wish I had a rabbit in a hat with a bat and a 6'4" baller. I wish I had a brand new car, so far I got this hatchback. And everywhere I go, yo, I get laughed at. And when I'm in my car, I'm laid back. I got an 8-track and a spare tire in the backseat, but that's flat. And if you wanna know what's really whack, see, I can't even get a date, so what you think of that? I heard that prom night is a bomb night with a hood ratchet and old type of Rito. Figaro, when in my car, I can't even get a hello. Well, so many people wanna cruise Crenshaw on Sunday. One day I'ma have to get in my car and go. You know, I take the 110 into the 105. Get off on Crenshaw, tell my homies look alive. Cause it's hard to survive when you're living in the concrete jungles and these girls keep passing me by. She looks fly, she looks fly. Make me say my. I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl who looked good, I would call her. Wish I had a rabbit in a hat with a bat and 6'4" and baller. I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl who looked good, I would call her. Wish I had a rabbit in a hat with a bat and 6'4" and baller. I wish I was a little bit taller. I was a little bit taller.
I was a baller. Wish I was a little bit taller. Wish I was a baller. Wish I was a little bit taller, y'all. Wish I was a baller. Wish I was a little bit taller. Wish I was a baller. Hey, I wish I had my way, cause every day would be a Friday, and you can even speed on the highway. I would play ghetto games, name my kids ghetto names. Little Mookie, the Owl, the Rain. Yo, you know that's on the real. So if you down on your luck, then you should know just how I feel. Cause if you don't want me around, see I go simple, I go easy, I go Greyhound. Hey, you, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Ah, yes, ain't that fresh? Everybody wants to get down like that. Wish I was a little bit taller, I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl who looked good, I would call her. Wish I had a rabbit in a hat with a bat and a 6'4" baller. I wish I was a little bit taller, I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl who looked good, I would call her. Wish I had a rabbit in a hat with a bat.